Stephen, and welcome to another edition of the Jersnet podcast, an independent Rangers podcast by fans for fans, where all the content is absolutely free. Tonight, as always, we are coming to you in association with Forest Precision Engineering. I'll be your host this evening, Rob Fawcett, and tonight we're going to be looking back at today's draw against Celtic. But before I introduce my guest, I want to encourage you to visit the Jersnet website. Not only do we have our main website with a host of quality articles and online museum, but it also hosts our popular forums, which are a great place to keep up to date with the latest Rangers news and discussion. Tonight, as always, we are live on YouTube, and we'd ask that you continue to spread the word amongst your friends and family, share the pod on social media, subscribe to the channel, as well as stop by the forums and join in the chat there too. Now, I need to give another mention to our partners over at Forest Precision Engineering. They're a Glasgow-based engineering company who have been a big commercial supporter of Rangers for a number of years, and we are delighted to have them supporting the pod. If you want more information about them, please visit their website at www.forestprecisioneng.com. They've also got a stunning executive lounge in the Ibrox main stand, and for more information than that, you can email the club at hospitality@rangers.co.uk. Now to introduce my guest for this evening, the Han Solo to my Chewbacca, Mr. Stuart Weir. How are you doing today, Stuart?
I'm doing very well. I'm just looking about here for my lightsaber to see if it would help you in any way, shape, or form. So
we can't have that, mate. There'll be too many people that take offence to that sort of stuff today, you know. So
best not have any weapons out. I know. I get a chap at the door and folk asking, "Is that real?" Yeah, you can just pick them up. You pick them up online on, you know, eBay and the likes. Guaranteed to take your head off with one chop. But
absolutely.
No, I found all of that highly amusing today.
I think the only thing that could have made that Tifo better, and we'll touch on it in a wee bit, had it been Vaclav Czerny with a water pistol, that might have been even better, to be honest, and sent him even into more of a meltdown.
My sentiments entirely. Who needs a shotgun when you can have a water pistol?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. So we're here to talk about the game today, obviously, mate. And we'll start with the lineup. I think it was a bit of a change in shape today for the manager. And we lined up with Kelly and goals, back four of Tav, Balogun, Suter and Yefti. What looked like a midfield four of Barron, Raskin, Diamandé and Bajrami, with Czerny and Dessers. Now, I'm going to be honest, as I was heading to the game on the supporters bus, I wasn't too happy to see that lineup, and mainly because I've said previously on this pod that the kind of five games after the split were going to be dead rubbers anyway. We weren't going to win anything, and I really wanted to see us being given an opportunity to play us with a knife on next season. So, you know, for that, my main disappointment was not seeing Iggyman up top instead of Dessers, because we know what he does. But what was your view in that starting lineup when you saw it come out and the kind of manager changing shape, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, when I saw it on paper or on the screen, I had a number of thoughts going through my head. One, I was beginning to wonder where Dessers might play. I was beginning to wonder if Barry Ferguson had suddenly introduced him as a kind of Ranger version of Joe Linton, and turning him into a midfielder out of desperation, or like, a bit like Walter Smith against, was it Slavia Sofia, when he played Duncan Ferguson wide left. I think to myself, well, that's novel. But, you know, I think in all of this, we have to realise, despite what Barry Ferguson says sometimes, and contrary to what he says sometimes, I'm not quite sure whether he thinks he's not getting the job or believes that he's still in with a chance of getting the job. And he's kind of alluded that, oh, I would still like to be considered for the job, without coming in and saying, you know, I'd be really disappointed if I don't get it. And I sometimes think, or I have believed, that his workings around the last couple of weeks are down to him still trying to gain as many points as possible. But he came out last week and said, "Oh, what, again, 15 out of 15 points in the running." Well, obviously that didn't last very long. But I still think he's trying to do a job that sees him or makes him look good, rather than anything that might be beneficial for the actual team going forward.
And yeah, I mean,
whether that's selfishness, I'm not sure. But I think a lot of fans have become, well, they've been disillusioned for a while, but I think there's like a disillusionment in as much as, is this guy doing anything to benefit us when he's not here, or is he just playing for himself?
I kind of got that feeling as well, mate. I mean, I said that to a couple of the guys that sat near me, and I think they were thinking the same thing, that definitely looked like a selection that was for Barry and but not the team. And I think he definitely wants the job, and don't get me wrong, I think anybody that's captained and played for the club would love the chance to manage Rangers, but at some point you have to put him out of his misery, and I think he made those comments about takeovers and new managers and needing to know what's going to happen, because there's a lot of prep work to be done for next season, and we'll probably talk a wee bit about that later on in the pod. But I think for his sake and for everybody else's sake, a line just needs to be drawn under the sand and say, Barry, you're not going to get the job. The whole point now is just to manage the next kind of three games, get over the line, and then we'll thank you for your service and go back to your ambassador role.
Yeah, no, I think that's where you're at. I mean, he said some. I mean, we touched upon this last week as well, saying that, well, if I don't get this job, I'm leaving football. Almost like making this a fait accompli that world football, the global game will lose Barry Ferguson forever if Rangers don't give him a job. Come on, again, I think he's saying these things to try and convince. I'm not sure whether he's convincing himself or convincing the current board or the new owners, but I'd have to say I don't really see it happening
I think he'll likely be involved in the club going forward in some shape or form, but not as the management team. But I'm sure there'll be plenty of time to discuss that over the next few weeks and months as we hit the summertime as well. But on the game, it was actually quite a fast start for us. And within a minute, we probably could have been in the lead. Big Zorro, aka Leon Balogun, with that face mask on today, smashing a header off the bar. And I think watching it back, live during the game, I thought he was unlucky. Watching it back, being super critical, he probably could have done a little bit better because it was essentially a free header. But what a start that would have been if that hit the back of the net.
Yeah, that word, that little word, if, it's done a lot of heavy lifting this year, hasn't it? If this had happened, or if he had done this, or if he had stayed in the house, I think if you had been hypercritical, you'd have said he could have placed it even, better, get it on target and do what he did. It looked pretty damn good at the time. But as you see, under closer scrutiny, he probably should have done better. But again, the fact he's actually showing the willingness to get into that position is something that we haven't always seen from Rangers centre backs in the last 12 months, is it?
I know. It's I all ifs, buts, and maybes, I think, and it comes from us probably trying to just grasp on the slightest little bit of positivity that we can in what's been a pretty fucking dreadful season.
Yeah, we're now at a stage when it comes to positivity of you can accentuate the positives, but we're now doing it to warp factor 25, and I don't think we've ever been there without actually causing a massive explosion somewhere. So
Absolutely.
I think, listen, I know a lot of Rangers fans will be thinking we should have done better. A lot of guys in the media as well have been looking and have watched Rangers all season, and they have thought to themselves, they should have been doing better. There's been an expectation, and in some respects, I think actually Rangers have got an easy ride out of it because nobody has been, well, certain parties have, maybe me, but nobody's been ready to actually criticise Rangers to within an inch of their lives. Simply because time on time this season, they've come out with the most bizarre results. In Europe, they produced results that nobody saw coming. Beating Celtic, so comprehensively at New Year, nobody saw that coming either. And you sort of run the risk, or it's your own peril, of really writing off Rangers. But I think we've reached a stage now where you're in the last five games of the season. it cannot get any better. It could maybe even get worse, but it cannot get any better. And when I said it weeks and weeks ago, after losing in the Scottish Cup, nothing but nothing was going to make this season palatable or give anybody plus marks. And I think just now we're in the death throes of what has been yet another season of utter, disappointment and bereft of, at times, bereft of all hope.
I know, absolutely, absolutely, and it's taking that into the game. We almost had a wee bit of hope again on the 8th minute with what seems to be the tallest man in the pitch, because Raskin played pretty well today, and there'll be a couple of things that we talk about with him. But Bajrami plays a great ball out to him, who plays it inside to Czerny. He's actually unlucky that the deflection is saved by the keeper. And from that resulting corner, Raskin manages to get in the end of it, and forces the keeper to make a good save. But that first kind of 10, 15 minutes, we actually started well. I think the shape looked a bit like a 4-3-3 with Dio Raskin and Barron taking turns to cover the wings, and Bajrami playing further forward. But
I think for the first 15 minutes, I think they're probably getting wound up all week. You need to start quick, you need to start fast, you need to do this, you must do this. And they did start well. I think after that first 15 minutes, there was kind of one or two looking at each other. What were we told to do after this? It wasn't quite the free-flowing experience that anybody expected. I thought it was I mean, I've seen enough draws in Old Firm matches. You very, very rarely see a draw that you think to yourself, well, that was worth watching. Three, three draws and four, four draws, they come along once in a blue tifo. But I thought actually both sides were looking at it as if to say, well, if we don't lose, it's a result. And ultimately, at the end of the game, I think actually they could have actually, just like shake hands after an hour and we'll just go home.
It wasn't a game full of great quality at all. I mean, our goal apart, I thought, was a really good move, and we'll talk about that in a wee minute. But other than that, as you say, both teams did really huff and puff. It wasn't as if we were backwards and forwards and creating clear cut chance after clear cut chance. But we did have the ball in the back of the net in what was the first major talking point of the game. Tav stuck a fairly decent ball into the box, and again, that wee man Raskin's got on the end of it and stuck it in the back of the net. Now, at the game, watching it live, the linesman doesn't give offside. I think, having watched it back, obviously it's been chopped off by VAR. The thing that gets me is I don't know how the hell they were in a position to see through the images that we did, that they showed on Sky with the replay, to be able to
X-ray
draw the
eyes,
lines effectively. You know
X-ray
what I mean?
eyes. Ray Milland is in the VAR box, the man with X-ray eyes for all you old movie fans out there. They'll be quite bloodshot and runny by now, I would imagine, if you can actually see through hard objects. But you're right. It just looks a complete mishmash of lines, and you could be drawing lines and vectors and all sorts, and trying to come up with a decision there. I just think it's almost like, well, we've got VAR, therefore whatever we decide will go, and you can't argue against it because you don't have the wherewithal to actually break it down or digest the information that we've got, because we'll only show you the bits that really matter.
And that was the thing that got me with it again. Again, it's sadly not going to be the only time that we'll speak about it during this pod, but it just seemed one of those ones. And don't get me wrong, with some of the stills that you see, he kind of does look as if his shoulder's in an offside position, but it's impossible to tell as you're looking through that, line of players, both Celtic and Rangers players, whose foot's where, in what part of the body of the opposition is in what bit. It's like, so for them to definitively give that as an offside just beggars belief to me.
Yeah, imagine somebody with the same capacity as Michael Jackson and leaning forward, or like a ski jumper able to lean forward like that with their feet planted somewhere else, and you would still try and give it offside. The whole thing with VAR and what's offside and what's onside is just a complete and utter joke. And to be honest, I'm finding it more and more difficult to pilot some of these decisions. It's just you know there's a hint of offside, but equally there's umpteen examples of what would make it onside. And this whole thing about being level, I think it should be the same as the likes of the kind of the Tour de France, right? Where you've got the guys that are flying over the line, but as long as you're part of the main peloton, then you all get the same time. And I would think as long as a part of your body or anatomy is level with the last defender, supposing you are on your head and shoulders in front of somebody, as long as your legs and feet are level with theirs, you must still be deemed to be onside. And I would think that would be a far better and more attractive proposition than trying to second guess who's been to the nail bar and get his nails clipped, or who needs to disregard his facial hair and get a bit of a closer shave, talking of which, you no longer have brought yourself out, but it's just something that's becoming more and more obtuse as you watch the football.
No, I absolutely agree, and I think I've heard rumours and murmurs that they're going to change the offside rule to have clear daylight. So that example you gave, if there's a part of your body that is level with the
Yeah.
defender, you're going to be onside. So if that does change, it should make it a little bit easier. I think the problem that I've got with VAR up here as well is that we kind of do it on the cheap. It's almost like minimum viable product that we've put in rather than looking at how we can make it an enhancement to the game. Now, I know it does have its problems down south as well, but at some point we've got to look at it and say, just get back to playing football.
I think maybe they're up here and that there's actually two guys who are sitting outside StepX or Rediffusion or something like that, watching the replays on Sky and have a mobile phone, and that's what they're making the decisions through. They can't afford all the technology, they're kidding everybody on that the technology is there. It's not, they're just sitting watching two televisions in the pub or wherever it is and making the decisions off the back of that. I said, oh, years ago, when VAR was being introduced to Scotland, the problem wasn't either having it or not having it. The problem I had, and I've been proven right umpteen times, is that the same people that you don't trust as being officials are then getting the job of calling what they see on TV. If you're incompetent blowing a whistle, right? And you cannot make your mind up exactly what you're seeing. If you're put in a booth, you've got to know what you're watching. And if you don't know what you're seeing and you can't basically work out what the pictures mean or what different positions mean in terms of guys making tackles or challenges or penalties and all that kind of stuff, you shouldn't be doing it. And the whole thing about the Scottish referees and the referees in Scotland, they are of a poor quality, I would say. But in saying that, you watch the European games in midweek there and watch other European games, I don't think the referees are any better anywhere else or any worse. You're still getting completely dubious decisions. Even the one when, you're looking at Man United and Bilbao and United get a penalty for a guy having the slightest tug of a shirt. Meanwhile, back at Ibrox a few weeks earlier, you've got somebody getting the shirt ripped off his back and there's nothing to be seen. And by the way, you're booked for wearing a shirt of such poor quality as well. So this whole thing about, oh, we need to, would it improve if we brought in foreign officials or neutral officials from other countries and all the rest of it? I don't think it would matter a damn. Because you know that the wrong decision went against your team. They'd be floating at Glasgow Airport, hanging on the fence, watching for your flight take off to tell you what they thought of you.
No, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see what develops over the course of next year with that, and whether it sticks about or not. But we're stuck with it. We need to deal with it, and I'm sure there'll be another couple of instances we'll talk on during the game as we go on through the pod. But yeah, I think we had a wee bit of a scare on the 32nd minute, and I thought Kelly made a couple of good saves today. I thought that his use of the ball could have been a little bit better, but then the movement in front of him probably wasn't as good as it needed to be. But Carter Vickers gets a header from a corner, and it was a really good save. I felt by Kelly just to tip it over the bar. It was just a wee scare that Celtic hadn't threatened much in that first half, but a wee reminder that they were still in it, and we needed to be pretty careful. Otherwise, we'd have been the ones going behind. So needed to keep switched on. But we did finally make the breakthrough on the 43rd minute, and it was that man, big CD9, 24th or 25th goal of the season, was it? But I
I've
thought,
lost count. I really have lost count. I lost count after four.
but I thought this was actually a really good goal from a quick corner by Celtic as well. Ida had a great chance to put them one up, and Kelly makes another good save. But from that corner, the ball works its way to Bezrami. He's played it out fairly quickly to Cherny, who's on the right wing at this point. He does what he usually does, which is cut back inside. It goes back to Barron, who pass feeds it straight to Deal straight away, by which point Cherny's bust his backside to get in and kind of support Dessers. Deal's played a really good ball in, and it was a brilliant dummy from Cherny, just to allow the ball to run through to Dessers, who kind of bully scales and keeps him at arm's length, and finishes it brilliantly past the keeper to stick his one up. And there's no chance of that beating getting chopped off for offside, and no debate over that goal. But I felt at that point we deserved the lead, and it was great to get in half time.
It was a good. I mean, it was a well-worked goal, and I have to say, credit where credit is due. It was a really good finish as well. I could also say that a broken clock is always right twice a day, but I won't. But it was a good finish. It begs a question: why don't you do that all the time? And the reason is because he's not the striker that some people think he is, but. He made that goal for himself, you have to say, because he held off the challenge, and scored a fine goal. So well done him. Still won't bring me into the Dessers Appreciation Society. If I was being blackballed from that, you would think I'd go to shit in the bucket. But I maybe set up my own club. But then again, it's he did well, as I say. Credit where credit is due. It was a good goal. A well-worked goal. It was a good move all in. But it brings us back, well, to the question: if you can do that so easily, why have you not done it regularly?
I think it's going to be the frustration with this Rangers team and that particular player, that we'll always have while he remains at the club. Because again, we saw in the second half the fresh air shot that he had, which sums up all of the bad of Cyril Dessers. So
Exhibit
it's
A, Exhibit B.
exactly. So we got the full microcosm in the 90 minutes from him. And it is he's at Rangers because he doesn't do it all the time. Because if he did it all the time, he wouldn't be at our club. He'd be in probably a top five league team somewhere. But I mean,
I've said it time and time again. Whoever cut his best of DVD should get an Academy Award. You should be first in the queue whenever there's Oscars being dished out, because it must be some edit on it.
We're going to get me edit some of the Jazznet podcast
It's
as well,
like
presents Stuart.
that edit the guys whoever put together his last 40 shots at goal. You know what I
Aye.
mean? And it was like, Honestly, in the Royal Artillery, it's called bracketing, which basically means you just keep hitting every point until you hit the one you're getting, and that's what he does. But no, I mean, it was a good go. It's a good go to get in an Old Firm game at any time, and it just adds to the complete frustration of so many people.
The enigmatic Cyril Dessers, yes, that's going to be on his tombstone, I think.
Aye, aye. Or
That's
that, and you get in the back of his shouts, pass.
it. And speaking of that, so there was no changes for either team at half time, and I think getting into that second half, we knew Celtic were going to try and come out at us, so we really had to keep them quiet for the first kind of 10, 15 minutes. But
See just on that point, that kind of it may not, but it kind of backs up what I said earlier there. It was almost like a game that two teams didn't really want to lose it. They wanted to win, but they didn't go into w tried so hard to win the game that they might actually lose it. And I think the two of them settled really at half time. You could have gone through both sides and made changes, I think. Because there were people there who, if it hadn't been the fact they touched the ball again in the 42nd minute, you wouldn't have actually known they were on the pitch.
Well, it's the same. I mean, it wasn't until he got subbed off that I realised that Engels was on the pitch. Baskin had done a really good job at keeping him on the other side. So I kind of fully agree. And I think that the just when you were talking about passing, 5 minutes into that second half, we had a good break. We'd kind of, I think it was a 3-on-3 at the time. Dessers was running with the ball, but the angle that I had of him, it looked like he was running away from goal and
Aye.
making the chance more difficult for himself, rather than looking to try and bring in Raskin or Cherney, who are up there supporting them. And I think that's probably one of the things that Barry mentioned in the post-match about being a bit more decisive on the counter. There was in that second half, we had a couple of really good breaks, but our decision making just left everything to be desired.
Aye.
A lot of the moves kind of petered out, where it was a tight game, and creating a good quality chance out of one of them would have been the difference between kind of winning and losing the game.
For me, that's a kind of equivalent of, for instance, in rugby, when you're one on one with somebody, if you're trying to get a try and you've only got a fullback to beat, you've got to be really decisive in where you go. You see it less so in maybe in football because there's usually a teammate or another defender around about you sort of type thing. But it's a one-on-one situation like that you have to make a very, very positive decision. And to be honest, I think sometimes players hold themselves up or run in a different way just because they're looking for backing, because they're looking for somebody to pass to because they don't want to take it on themselves. And then again, if you take it on yourself and it came to nothing, you may have a coach shouting at you, "Oh, you should have passed this, or you should have done that, or done the next thing." Finding players that are willing to take that risk themselves are few and far between now. Hence the reason why if they do that, and they do it on a regular basis, they usually don't end up at Ibrox, end up somewhere far more glamorous at Bayern Munich or wherever. But
Absolutely.
it just seems, I sometimes think, not being critical, overcritical like Dessers, but I sometimes think there's some players. The magnetic north kicks in, and they seem to be pulled away by some mysterious magnetic force. As if to say, I don't really want to run right towards the goal because I'll be left one on one with the goalkeeper. But if I veer this way, there's a chance I might get tackled or find a teammate out wide or something like that. It's about taking responsibility. And if you've not got that confidence level, there's no way you're going to put yourself in a position where you're going to be criticised.
Absolutely. And we saw it in the second half as well, because I think Eggermann had a couple of opportunities like that and just slowed it down, and wasn't the same direct kind of running at players than they usually was. So it's probably lack of confidence, big game, players kind of going, well, there's nothing left to play for now. So we'll just kind of do the best we can over the 90 minutes, and
Well,
we'll park it.
that part has been evident, and you have to say it whether you like it or not, it's been evident since Rangers went out of the Scottish Cup. And the fact that that today was, what is it? That is seventh straight game at Ibrox.
Yeah.
The Rangers haven't won a game. They've not won since getting back to Aberdeen.
Something like 3 months or something like that, I think it is.
Aye. I mean, that is outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
That is outrageous. Yeah. And anybody who's saying about, you know, supporting Rangers and supporting the jersey and playing for the jersey and all the other tripe that you hear, that is a statistic you could be battered over the head with. If you're not winning games dating that far back, you are in a real crisis. A crisis of confidence, but also a crisis of what you're putting out in the pitch in terms of what you think is a team.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, this whole thing about the Rangers way, you're accepting second best, and you have been for some considerable length of time, if you think this is acceptable.
And I'll jump forward to a point I was going to bring up once we cover the game. But you know, on the way to the game and the way back for the game, we're talking about what next summer or what the summer was going to look like. And obviously, the consensus is going to be it's big in terms of probably turnover a player. And I think the conversation that we were having on the bus, that to get the right type of quality in or the right player for what we want to do, get challenging for titles and stuff again. Realistically, you're going to need at least 9 players in that team, because you're going to need a keeper. We're going to need another right back. We need 2 quality centre halves. Yes, Dane Ridvan can't be relied on at left back.
No.
We probably need another good midfielder. We're going to need to replace Chelney if he doesn't stay at right wing. Probably need a left winger. And you'd say we need to bring a really high quality striker in that Besser than Egerman can play a part in rotation. So that's at least 9 players, and that doesn't give you squad depth.
No.
So it shows you the how big a job we're going to have over the next 2 or 3 windows. And I think we as fans are probably going to need to be a bit patient that some of these players that we don't really want to see near the team are going to be sticking around for a wee bit. And we're going to need to be mindful of that. And it's not all going to be fixed from day one.
I said the other week there that even though there was a rebuild when Souness came in, and a rebuild when Advocaat came in.
Yeah.
Both of them had a hardcore of Rangers players that they believed, both Souness and Advocaat believed, were good enough to actually be at the club at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Souness, he made some signings early on and introduced some guys that made it, some guys didn't make it. It was a slow and gradual process. But he got away with it because of a number of things. One of the biggest things was it was still in a time when you only get 2 points for a win, you know. So even if you drew, you didn't really lose that much distance between you and whoever else your challengers were. But he still had a whole bunch of people. You know, McCoist was there. Defensively, different players he could utilize. Advocaat comes in, okay. Gorham's away, McCall's away, McCoist is away, Durant's away, but you still had people like Ian Ferguson, George Alberts, and all the rest of it. They knew what it was to be part of Rangers and play for Rangers. So if you cleared 9 players at that current Rangers team, you literally would not have any depth whatsoever, because ultimately you're taking guys out of the equation who you don't think it's good enough and really shouldn't have been there in the first place. And, you know, I kind of was discussing it with somebody during the week. You're saying 9. You could almost have an entire team.
Yeah.
And I mean, like 11 or even up as many as 15, because you would be able to do better. So the guys that you mentioned, the Ridvan and Jeffrey, that's 2. So who's the best of those 2? And you would say neither. So that's 2 left backs you need. Do you know what I mean? Because the other guy couldn't be trusted. So this is a bigger rebuilding job over a window or 2 windows than I think a lot of people are actually, you know, maybe thinking. They still think that there's Rangers players there who are worthy of a place. I think ultimately you have to say no, really. You've not done it this season. and this would be the easiest season in God's earth to do it. You know, quit, because you have had nothing to beat on your own performances from the last couple of years.
Absolutely, and I think that's the big problem, because it's asking what's then realistic this summer, and for me, you know, bringing in 15 players isn't something that I think we can do, because we've got to get a new manager in, and we need to at least get some of it settled to begin with. I think if you look at the squad currently, you know, Diomande, Raskin, Igaman, I know we'll always have that debate over Dessers, are really the only kind of players who could fetch a transfer fee to be able to kind of fill the coffers. But then you're taking a quality player out of the team rather than adding it in. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens off the field with sponsorship deals and money coming into the club to determine how much money we can actually spend under the financial fair play rules, because that's going to have a big impact on what we can do from a playing squad point of view as well.
I don't think it'll be that much a demand, because you've been paying top dollar for crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should be able to make the same moves in the lights to bring in other people who are better for this for similar money. You're not going to tell me that there's only the one stop shop that you can go and buy players for Ibrox. No, there's going to be players all over the place. I think whoever does come in, you know, and I think we'll have seen it with the sort of whatever direction the director of football goes down, whether he's got the ear of certain agents and certain other clubs and the likes. This will be a test for him first time out. And don't get me wrong, he will make mistakes. He's bound to make mistakes. You don't have that kind of turnover and that kind of overhaul without making mistakes. But it's going to be interesting to see who's got his contacts book, and whoever does come in as the head coach, who he's able to tap into as well.
Absolutely. But back to the game. Unfortunately, on the 56th minute,
is it finished yet?
No.
I thought I'd miss a bit. I couldn't find all the things you're talking about. I couldn't find anything to talk about.
The 56th minute, the opposition level, after another VAR call. I thought what was interesting to me today was that both VAR calls were overturning the linesman's original decision. So, you know, our goal being given offside when it was given onside live, and then this one because it was actually chalked off by the linesman. Again, really couldn't see it live in the stadium, but having watched it back, you know, Maeda is in an offside position. The argument is going to be whether he was interfering with play or whether it could be construed that he was interfering with play, but VAR obviously decided he wasn't. So what's your view? What was your view on that? If had it been chopped off for us, would you be disappointed?
The famous Bill Shankly once said, if he's not interfering with play, what's he doing on the pitch? And that is something I've always kind of thought to myself when you have this debate or have this argument. And, you know, if that had been a Rangers goal, or if that had been a goal for anybody and it had been chalked off, I think it's just when you have to suck up your disappointment and take the chin. So to that end, I thought it was in a position where he was, if not interfering with play, he had an influence on what was happening around him. Mm. And to that end, I thought he was offside. But I would say that, I hold my hands up, I would say that regardless of what team it was or who it was, I think you're going to get in the minutiae of what is offside and what isn't offside and what influence people have got. And to that end, I just think that the linesman got the call right. And I just wondered who was watching that again. You know, was it a man with x-ray eyes who could see things that, or maybe his x-ray eyes had to work with that point, could he see the obvious? But I thought it was offside.
And to be fair, mate, in truth, I mean, I thought the second half was pretty poor. But there was.
I mean, we're finished.
No, yeah, mate, we've still got a wee bit to go. I've got a bit, I've got a whole section of Phillett and Nick Walsh here as well that we need to get through. So I'm looking forward to that. But we did have a potential penalty shout on the 8th minute. And again, this is the opposite end of the stadium for me, so I didn't get a good view in it in real time. Initially, I thought it looked like there might have been a handball in there. But having seen it the replays back, I think I'd probably agree with Ferguson's comments after the game about if that is anywhere in the pitch other than the penalty box, that's a free kick. And I think we got done by a very similar incident where Hadji was penalised for getting his body in the way of a Hibs player, and we got a penalty against us. But what was your view on that? Should we have been given a penalty, or are we looking at that through the blue tinted specs?
No, I think come back. I think Barry Ferguson basically said what a lot of people would be thinking. The thing is, though, even with that sort of rule of thumb, it doesn't always apply. It'd be the same if different free kicks given and not given. As soon as you get to the penalty box, no, it's something different. It's like a goalkeeper laying out a jump up with his knees up or his feet up when a player, it's like, oh, he has to protect himself. Well, if I'm a centre back, I'd quite like to protect myself as well. So I'll just stick my foot in his chest. It doesn't work that way. And again, we're down to the minor details here, which either make football the game it's been for many years, or you start taking these things out of the game and making it like individual rulings or individual laws and deciding how you're feeling a particular day. And it's just making a mockery of officialdom. They managed to make a mockery of themselves, by the way. Don't get it wrong. But I think the whole thing about how they interpret things or how they see things, fans, and I don't just mean Rangers fans, I mean all fans in general. If you speak to anybody, in the past week I have spoken to Wraith fans, Falkirk fans, Accies fans, Motherwell fans, Celtic fans, and each and every one of them, if you watch enough football, will say the same thing. That it used to be, it's because of the scrutiny that officials are under. They're picked up on every single angle, and this started when they started putting an assessor in the stand, and they had to guess what the assessor was thinking. So they started making decisions based on what they thought the assessor were thinking. Now it's what how they're going to be, filleted by a TV panel rather than actually making the decision. If you took football cameras out of all the grounds other than the one that you had you maybe televising, you wouldn't have this issue. Not at all. There were decisions made, absolutely dire decisions made throughout the history of football. But if you went back and examined them all, you'd either overturn them or ask for replays or just cancel the football in general. These were accepted. People made mistakes, and you just have to suck it up and get on with it. Now, because of the scrutiny, people are frightened to make mistakes. Hence the reason why linesmen don't show flags, referees will play on, they don't give penalties because they think there's somebody behind them watching VAR who can make those decisions for them. And the fact of the matter is, they're as gutless as the guy on the pitch or in the sidelines who's not making that decision in the first place.
Absolutely. And I wanted to touch on the performance of Callum McGregor as the ref. I mean, sorry, Nick Walsh as the referee today. Because I think I just struggle to understand sometimes how there can be different standards when it comes to teams and how referees approach refereeing them. And I think it summed it up. So Celtic finished the game with double the fouls, yet we ended up with two bookings. No, we ended up with two bookings. Right?
I
One of
know.
them, the first two bookings of the game, might add, our manager and Bailey Rice, who came on with the first tackle as he entered the field of play. And even that first half, I could count probably three or four fouls that McGregor made that could have easily been picked up for a booking. Yet, for some reason, there just seems to be kind of air of the untouchable against it when it comes to officials. Now, the one thing I will say, I was glad to see Raskin in Walsh's face today when McGregor was going over and nipping him in the ear about who he should be booking and who he should be giving free kicks against.
Was he,
But
sorry, Raskin, is that the Rangers captain? Oh no, that's not the Rangers captain,
no,
is it?
we'll touch on that in a wee minute, mate, because I think for the protection of Raskin, you need to make him a captain if he's going to have that role on the pitch, because otherwise it leaves him open to getting a silly booking for going and challenging the referee's decisions. But you know, for me, this is something that I would like the club to be calling out rather than putting out statements about fucking tifos that have offended people. And for the record, my own personal opinion is Nick Walsh should be nowhere near an SPFL game because he is a terrible, terrible referee. And I've seen him referee high school football games, and he's exactly the same as he is in the Premiership. He's a shocking referee. But yeah,
He's actually been promoted because of the mediocrity elsewhere. And that's and that applies to so many officials in Scotland. You know, years ago there was criticism made of referees and all the rest of it. And it's only when you watch old matches back, you actually realise how good those referees actually were. I mean, don't get me wrong, there were some space cadets even then, but now it's just a cabal of beige. You know what I mean? Forget your black outfit, just wear beige. You're vanilla, you're bland, you're cowardice, you're not make a decision worth make a decision for. And unfortunately, that spread its way through football, and through into different teams. If a guy's making fouls, book him. If you don't want to book him, don't book the guy in the opposition team. And I'm not saying that from a Rangers perspective. I'm just saying that as something you see in general. The standard of officialdom in Scotland is chronic. And the thing is, they've reached a stage now where you get these so-called elite referees who they can't drop because they've got nobody else there that they trust. You know, you have manipulated and manufactured these officials into a mold. And unless you actually smash that mold, you're going to end up with referees like that for the next decade. And none of them, I think, you know, there is no surprise or no shock that Scotland don't even supply referees to the European Championship finals or World Cups. Why? Because you're crap.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
End
hopefully,
of. End of.
I was going to say, hopefully that's the last time we'll ever have to speak about this, but probably not, knowing me, mate, so it's fine. But we do need to speak about one last incident in the game, and it wouldn't be a Rangers game if we didn't do something fucking stupid in it. And right on the cusp of the final whistle, you know, our captain somehow manages to give the ball straight to a Celtic player who plays through Maeda, straight in on goal, and Liam Kelly bails his captain out big time here because he manages to block it. What a horrific end to
And
the
Tavernier
game
spins around and looks for somebody. Who can I blame? Nick
that
Walsh.
would
Nick Walsh,
have
I'll
been.
blame Nick
But
Walsh.
my God, could you imagine had that gone any worse than that? Jeez, oh, it was I it was
Funnily enough, I could imagine it, but because we've been there and seen it. You know, the Celtic, you know, equaliser comes from the ball getting hit over the top of Tavernier and him running about with his mouth open going, where is it going to go? Listen, for me, he's always been an accident waiting to happen. That would just have epitomised his entire Rangers career if that had happened, you know, right at the end. And there, you know, whatever you believe in, whether it's white heather or, you know, spirits or whatever it was, one of them or some of them got Rangers off the hook in that occasion. But it wouldn't
Absolutely.
surprise me if that had been the final epitaph in, you know, Tavernier's career at Ibrox.
That would have been a fitting end to his career anyway, that's for sure. But that was it. Finished 1-1. I think on balance of play, and to be fair, it was a game really devoid of any quality. I'd draw was
It wasn't
probably
any
a
good.
failure.
Just a point you made about Raskin. If Raskin's going to get into the face of referees, then he should have a captain's armband that allows him to do that, right? The fact of the matter was, you'd arrange as captain there today. Hold on. Oh, today you had. He didn't say anything. Raskin took it on his part to say these things. But the other thing that was obvious to me was there was not another Rangers player who basically made a grab at Raskin and pulled him away and said, shut up, or you're going to get yourself booked or even sent off because the referee is just looking to make an example of you. And that bit of it for me, having grown up watching umpteen Rangers teams where you can identify who the captain was and who the team leaders were, there is nobody of team leadership quality in that Rangers side. Raskin's staying on board himself because he knows it has to be done, but he's got no support in doing that.
And that's the thing, mate. I've said for long enough, you don't need a captain's armband to be a leader on the pitch. And I think
No.
that's what we've lacked probably for the last 18 months, 2 years. Probably, we haven't got enough leaders in that dressing room to do that type of thing. And on the point about Raskin, I was going to cover him anyway because he was man of the match in the stadium today. Again, I thought it was another decent performance from him. He was obviously unlucky not to get in the score sheet. For me, he's a player that we could build around next year, and I would be giving him the armband. But I guess the only problem we've got is we really need to get that contract extended. Otherwise, we've got to sell him in the summer,
Yeah.
because again, we can't be losing a player of that quality for nothing.
No, I think he is a key element. You either get him to sign a longer term contract and make him the team leader and your team captain and build a team around him, or you decide how much you're going to get for him and how many players you can buy for the money you bring in. You cannot have this kind of middle ground. I said it before. Imagine having a player who starts arguing with De Bruyne about what's happening at international level. And starts giving his opinion to De Bruyne at international level. If you see that, you're going to be thinking, oh, I'm a manager. I need something like that for my team. I want a bit of him. Let's go to the middle aisle of world football, which is Scotland, and see how much we can pick up this guy for. Because for me, he has to be a target, and it's going to be dependent on what the attitude is from the Rangers board. Do you build a team around somebody like that, or do you cash in on him and try and buy two, three players with the money that you get? And that's going to be for me, that is the biggest test, the biggest initial test for what you're about to see at Ibrox.
No, absolutely. I'd agree with that, mate. And I think another player that I wanted to call out from the game because I thought he was brilliant. I thought he had a really good game was the Nigerian Davy Weir. Mr. Leon Balogun. And
Yeah.
I think it actually says a lot that at his age, with the injury problems, he's probably still the best defender that we've got at the club.
Yeah, who was allowed to leave a couple of seasons ago and then brought back? Who made the decision that he should leave in the first place? Honestly, I mean, I would get him. I would stick Embalming fluid through his veins. I'd put him in liquid oxygen. I'd freeze him during the summer, and then gradually thaw him out at the end of July into the beginning of August, just to make sure he was moving sufficiently to start playing games rather than even do pre-season training, because it'll just be a pat, it'll be a cut and shut job him all the way through. It'll just patch him up, get him on the pitch, patch him up. You don't need to train, you don't need to do this, and just keep him playing. Because you're right, bizarrely, and if in a cast of thousands, playing, I'm going to say playing, ha, how silly, trying to play centre back for Rangers, who have just been joke players. If you come out with the big clown shoes on and the big sparkly, multicolored wig. They wouldn't look any more of a clown than what they have been at times. And who, we go back then to the scouting system at Rangers. Who decided these guys were worth X amount a week, and who decided they were worth Y amount to go and sign them in the first place?
No, absolutely, mate. I'd agree. I was going to talk about Yefty, but given we've run out of time, I'll just cut that because I think we covered it during the game. But the one thing I did want to touch on before we leave the Old Firm game was the bottle thrown incident and the Tifo. Now, this is my own view and not the view of Jizznet podcast. But if you're one of the idiots who enjoy throwing things at opposition players or fans inside Ibrox, then you're absolutely not welcome at the ground. There is no need for this sort of stuff, and I hope that the individual or individuals are found and banned by the club from every stadium in Scotland, because it's something that always comes up, and it just takes away from the rest of the stadium and the rest of the fans that behave properly when they attend these games. And then the other thing I wanted to touch on, and then I'll ask for your thoughts, Stuart. I think the statement on the Tifo, and even mentioning that by the club, I was really disappointed in. I think it was embarrassing. I think there's been plenty of other examples of much more offensive displays, and for once, I just wish our board would grow a set of balls when it comes to this sort of stuff. I'm a big Star Wars fan. I thought it was brilliant that they had the Star Wars tagline in there about rebel scum, especially on May the 4th. But for people to go online and claim that it was a picture of Michael Stone and everything is just absolutely laughable, and shame on the club for responding like they have done. I don't know what your thoughts are on these matters, mate, but it just boiled my blood when I read that we actually fucking mentioned it in a statement and not defended the fans a wee bit for that.
Anybody that throws anything at a football match, I would happily tie them to a ballista or a catapult to see how far into the distance I could throw them. It's no funny, it's no clever. People got hurt and badly hurt with these things. Most of these people will be of an age where, as a kid, you didn't need to wear a hard hat. That was the in thing, getting a hard hat and getting it painted up and your team colours, so you could wear it so you didn't get scalped in the back of the cranium with somebody behind you throwing a Lanlick or a Buckfast bottle, right? So, in fact, it wasn't even Buckfast, it was Eldorado then. So, no, it's got no place in it. The Tifo, honestly, you could have, looking at it, it was pretty classy. I thought it was actually quite good without any words on it. Or if you're going to do a Tifo that size, half it in two and put Cherney with a water pistol on it. I think that would have even created more, unrest and even more of an irritant than putting any words on it. But for again, it shows you, but it's a generational thing. For people not to have known what that picture means either. You've been like living in the dark ages if you're a Rangers fan and don't know about that picture, or if you're a fan of Scottish football and you've never seen that picture, you've led a closeted life. And if you think it's somebody else, I would suggest that you actually start going online and reading a wee bit about history. I thought it was an opportunity. It was funny. I thought it was good. The wording, not so sure about. But there's an opportunity there. I mean, if you put Souness on there with a water pistol or something like that, it'd have been even more funny. But listen, each to their own.
That's
The
it.
whole thing about the Tifos is that it's an acquired taste. I don't get it. I always found the wee banners that people had made up. You could actually just read, rather than covering an entire stand with it. I thought they were much better value for money than doing these big, sort of mosaics and paintings. So, but then again, each to their own.
And we've got two more home games to come up before the end of the season, Aberdeen and Dundee United. Surely to God, we've got to be starting to play the likes of Nsiala. Obviously Rice came on today, but start him, Curtis, Cortez, Danilo, because these are players that we need to figure out if they're going to actually play a part next season, especially Cortez. You know, we're on the hook to pay 4.5 million quid for him, and he's not been getting any game time. So surely there's nothing left to play for. Give them the minutes.
Is there a sale and return deal or return deal on him? You know what I mean? It's like, look, we've not really used him. He's still got 25,000 miles, and he's in these sambas. He's fine. He can play for the next. He can play for 3 years longer than what you think he can play because we've just not used him. Listen, this goes back to the point, or I made or didn't make right at the outset. Is like the second guessing at what Barry Ferguson's actually doing and who he's doing it for. He's not doing it for the betterment of Rangers or the betterment of the players that are there. I still think he's trying to get the biggest bang for his buck and out of the players that are there for what he wants to achieve rather than what Rangers need to achieve. And nothing will convince me otherwise. I said it weeks ago, and nothing has changed my mind on that one.
And on that point, obviously there's been a lot of talk about who is going to be the new manager once the takeover's all announced and finalised. But now that the Celtic game's out the way, you know, Leeds have won the championship and promoted into the Premier League, it's been announced by them that Farke will be staying on as Leeds manager for next season. Do you think we'll start to see a bit of movement from the point of view of our own situation over the next couple of weeks before the season ends, or do you think we're going to have to wait a wee bit longer before
No,
that gets announced?
you're going to have to wait. I think things are different from when Rangers could go and announce as soon as he's coming in, and if you're not happy, there's the door. It doesn't work that way now. There's a lot of things that will be tied into players' contracts, tied into the agreements that have been made to either keep people there or let them go. I think you need this season plays out for so many contractual reasons. Just see out time, tread water. I mean, the season will come. It will come soon enough. And I have to say, rather than pontificating and wondering what's going to happen at the end of the season, there'll be more than enough time to be thinking about that once the season's finished. If you think, I wouldn't use up all my waking hours by wondering what Rangers are going to do in the next couple of weeks. Trust me, you'll have ample time to try and work that out once the final season sounds in this, or the final whistle sounds in this season, and it'll be fun and games thereafter.
Brilliant. I suppose you're right. Well, it's going to be a long summer. It's going to be a long summer. And I think, given that you mentioned final whistle, mate, and we're 5 minutes over, that's not too bad for me on a Sunday night, which is good. I just want to say a big thank you for coming on, Stuart. As always, it was a pleasure and it was a really good chat. Thanks very much, mate.
Well, I wasn't doing anything else at this time other than missing the Grand Prix. So I only have a word with Frankie when it comes to getting the organisation right for next season. If I'm still wanted and still available, if I'm not on a rasking late transfer out of the place, if you can manage to get another four bodies for the price of me.
You're irreplaceable, mate. You're in with the furniture. You're in with the furniture.
That's what I'm worried about. A quick dose of Cooper and all, and a wee bonfire, and that's you gone. I know my place.
So, as well as being live on YouTube tonight, folks, the show will be available on all podcasting platforms in the coming days. Your iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, etc. There's going to be no preview show this week. The guys are going to be back on the flagship next Sunday. Brian Archer will be your host, along with Alan and Scott, who will be the guest. All that's left for me to say is a massive thank you to all those watching live on YouTube, and thank you to all those that are listening again. May the fourth be with you.
Oh!